Hello, Blind to Cool Tech podcast listeners. My name is Roxy Homstad, and this is my very first podcast. The topic that prompted me to go from wannabe podcaster to first-time podcaster is a series of podcasts that have been done lately about training one's own guide dog. Larry started it, and then my friend Lisa Salinger did her podcast. And then Jerry from the UK did one, and I felt like I wanted to add my 2 cents because this topic is very near and dear to my heart. I am an owner trainer and work an owner trained guide dog. So before I get into the nitty gritty part of my podcast, wherein I address many of the issues that Larry brought up in his initial podcast, I would like to tell you all a little bit about me and about my family. As I said, my name is Roxy, and I live with my husband Bob in Memphis right now. However, we are evacuees from Hurricane Katrina and are going back home to New Orleans in about a week and a half. On March 25th, we'll be going back home, and I'm very excited. Bob and I have 4 dogs. Bristol is the oldest. She's a female golden retriever, and she's 8 and a half. She was trained for me by a guide dog organization. My next dog is Gracie. She's 5. She's a border collie. And she is my guide dog. The next dog is Millie, and she's 3. She's a female golden retriever, and she is my service dog that works for me doing other tasks. I'll get to that later. And finally, our youngest dog is Rudy. He is 2. He's a male golden retriever, and he works for my husband, Bob, who is also blind. Before I go any further, I'd like to mention that I have multiple disabilities. The other pretty large disability that looms fairly large in my life is a disease called Meniere's disease, which is a disease of the inner ear. Meniere's disease is one of those very tricky diseases. It leaves me profoundly deaf intermittently, usually at very inopportune moments. I've lost all hearing permanently in my right ear, so I'm profoundly deaf in that ear all the time, but my left ear does fluctuate from times like now, which are pretty good for me. However, the last 2 weeks have been pretty quiet around here because I've been pretty deaf, so it just depends on the day if I will wake up being able to hear or not. Another effect of Meniere's disease is chronic vertigo and dizziness. So sometimes the world is literally turned upside down for me. And things like bending over, leaning down can be rendered rather difficult. Which brings me to my next point. I, unlike most people, have 2 dogs that I work concurrently. No, I don't ever take them out in public together. Not usually. But they do work, both of them, doing different jobs at different times. As I mentioned, I have Meniere's disease, and unlike most guide dogs, after the harness is taken off, where they become just a regular dog, free to do whatever they choose in the home, I require other services from my dog, and Millie, my female golden retriever, is the one that steps in to fill that role. Things that I might need could be retrieving dropped objects, alerting me to the phone ringing, to the microwave dinging, to someone at the door. She can empty the dryer. She can empty and fill boxes if, for example, I've gone to the grocery store. So she does all of those things in the home. She also does work outside of the home as a guide dog from time to time. Gracie, my border collie, is the out and about dog. She does guide work for me out in public, but when she gets home, she's free to watch cats and do whatever it is border collies do on their off time, so Millie can take over. Some of the reasons I did this are that I've seen the rate of burnout of dogs who work for people with multiple disabilities, and it's really high because the dog is always working and the dog gets stressed and work isn't fun anymore and they just burn out and they don't want to do it. And I wanted to make sure that my dog had plenty of downtime. at least as much as a normal guide dog would. I live a very active life. I have two jobs. The first one is that of a Braille and Daily Living Skills instructor at the Lighthouse for the Blind in New Orleans. And I'm also a qualified herbalist and have almost become certified in canine massage therapy. So on the weekends and on my off time, I run my own herbal and massage therapy consulting business along with training. I'm also very active socially and I'm very active in my community in the dog rescue and dog training communities. And I didn't think it was fair for one dog to have to work all the time outside with me. I can be gone from anywhere from 6 to 15 hours during a busy day and then come home, take the harness off, and work some more. I really wanted to make sure that my dog lived a balanced life and was able to take some downtime. We all need downtime just to hang out, regroup, do fun things like play, and, you know, just relax. So I wanted to make sure that my dogs had plenty of that. And also there was the issue of burnout. So I really felt like for me and for my circumstance, it was a wonderful way to go. It does have its downsides. I needed to clear having this many dogs with my landlord. But seeing as how I have a pet, Bristol, my old dog, it's really not a problem because once you have three big dogs in a house, what's a fourth? And it is, you know, a heavier financial burden having two working service dogs. It's certainly not cheap, but I don't have any hobbies anyway, so what am I going to do with my money besides support my dogs? The next part of the podcast, I would like to spend time addressing some of Larry's thoughts on owner training and a couple of his big, maybe, qualms that he may have had. The first one is that of the fact that he was concerned that a blind trainer would not be able to give as wide variety of experiences to a dog in training as maybe a sighted program trainer could. And I agree with him. I don't agree with him that it's a problem, but I do agree with him that it is something to be concerned about, something to take very seriously. So in my attempts to do this, I started a training log. And in my training log, I kept a diary, talked about places we went, talked about things we did and my dog's reaction. And I also list places that I felt were really crucial for a dog to be comfortable working in. I went from most important to, you know, that's nice if we have time. So from greatest to least. And I made sure to go through all these places and to work my dog several times in each of these places. So my dog has worked, for example, on country roads, on suburban streets, on very urban streets, in front of a lake, you know, with lots of wildlife distraction, in small neighborhoods, in large neighborhoods, on busy days, on not so crowded days, and during all kinds of distractions, having to avoid all kinds of obstacles, whether they be two-footed obstacles or stationary inanimate obstacles. I really wrote down what I wanted to do with each of those things, and I made sure to check them off as I went. Some of the things I did when I would go to these different places is I would start slowly, and I would start from a far distance away, letting my dog have time to gradually get used to wherever it is that we were. It was also very important to me that when I went to a place for the first or second time, that I went there as my dog's trainer and not for my own benefit. So when I went to a mall, for example, for the first time, I wasn't there to shop, I wasn't there to meet friends, I wasn't there to eat at the food court, I was there to train my dog. And if my dog had any problems, showed any kind of concern, I was able to reassess from there and decide what I was going to do, what action I was going to take, if I was going to leave, or what have you. But because I was so systematic about introducing various environments, my dog, 99% of the time, didn't have a problem at all. So I believe that that's a very important part of training one's own guide dog. And I know that sometimes people may not live in such an urban, such a rich environment where there are plenty of different environments to work your dog. But I know that some owner trainers who have those kinds of situations may just take longer to accomplish everything that they need to do. And that's one of the great advantages to owner training. When I got Gracie and Millie, I didn't get them at the same time. I got them about 2 years apart. When I got Gracie and Millie, they were both fairly blank slates. They had come from rescue, Millie from an all-breed golden retriever rescue, and Gracie from a kill shelter. So they had had very little experience with anything. And like Lisa was saying about Joey, they were pretty much a blank slate. The next topic I would like to address is that of traffic training. It seems very daunting at first when one thinks about training their own guide dog to do intelligent disobedience and to work in and to train in heavy traffic situations. I know I was very overwhelmed at first. I started out with my dog. We started out working around pedestrian traffic, very heavy pedestrian traffic, with maybe pedestrians who were moving very rapidly, very erratically, and not watching out where they were going. So my dog, in order to keep me safe, really had to learn that just because someone is walking at 80 miles an hour now doesn't mean that they're going to slam on the brakes in 2 seconds. And if they're not careful, they're going to run me into them. I really believe that traffic behaviors are just basically an offshoot of pedestrian behaviors. Avoiding pedestrians, keeping you at a safe distance, and learning to back up or stop when necessary without a command from me, maybe even going against my command to continue forward. I also started out with people on skateboards, people on bicycles, and that was wonderful too because it was a very light, non-stress situation, and I really felt like I wanted to build up slowly. When you come to vehicular traffic, there are several ways that you can do it. The first is to use environmental traffic, traffic that's already there for you. And the second option is to use a driver and to stage some setups. What I like to do is I like to start off using environmental traffic. So for me, what I like to do is start like on a Tuesday morning when everybody's at school or work and the neighborhoods are quiet. I go into a neighborhood with some very quiet streets with only a few cars coming up one at a time. And I start from there. And I finish with a driver driving very aggressively. It's, you know, a driver that I know. And we have set up communication through the use of cell phones or two-way radios so that we're always in communication with each other. And actually, I have a really funny story about the driver. My husband was training his dog, and a friend of ours was driving traffic for him, or as we like to call it, blind man chicken. She was driving very aggressively because we were finishing out his traffic training, and she really wanted to give him a run for his money. So she was doing some pretty crazy driving tactics. And all of a sudden, this gentleman saw her doing it and began yelling at her. And when she got to a stoplight, he came down off the sidewalk, walked up to her car, asked her to roll down her window, and gave her the bawling out of her lifetime for trying to kill the poor blind man. And it was all she could do not to laugh, because she, as she eventually explained to him, that we were friends and that, you know, this was a training situation, and he was fine with that, but oh, he was not a happy camper at the beginning, and he thought she was all kinds of cruel. So as I said, we like to end with a driver, and that driver is communicating with us, and that's kind of the way the dog is put through its paces. I'm a pretty big fan of introducing traffic work early. Not on the first day, not even on the first week, but fairly early in the game, because as I figure it, traffic's going to come at my dog at some point, and I want their first experience with maybe a close brush to be something that I set up, I want to introduce traffic on my terms, not on someone else's terms, because I haven't done it. Because if I I've had the experience that if I don't do it, it's going to happen to me when I'm not prepared or during a time when it wouldn't be best, or maybe when my dog doesn't even know how to react. So I would like to set up some situations fairly early in the game so that my dog can be comfortable with at least mild traffic and has had experience with pre-mild traffic traffic checks, excuse me. I would like to talk about some of the reasons that I owner trained, because I do get asked that a lot. And as Lisa said, one doesn't necessarily have to have enmity toward a guide dog program in order to really feel that owner training is the right option for you. I'll tell you the reasons that I chose this path. Like Debbie and like Lisa and like Jerry, I am also a clicker trainer and want my dog to be clicker trained from as young as an age as possible. I really have seen a noticeable difference between my dogs that I trained myself, Gracie and Millie, and Bristol, who was not trained with the clicker and who was trained with traditional methods. And I think it's a change for the good. So I really believe that introducing a dog to operant training from as young of an age as possible is going to yield me a greater benefit. The next reason I am a clicker trainer is that I am a firm believer in natural rearing, which just basically means caring for your dog in as natural a way as possible, from as young of an age as possible. So I feed my dogs a raw diet consisting of raw meaty bones, organ meat, and muscle meat. I also vaccinate my dogs as minimally as possible and use antibiotics and steroids and other kind of modern treatments as minimally as possible. I want to be as natural as possible, so I use herbs and homeopathy and am very strict about when and with what my dogs are vaccinated. And because most of the vaccinating at least goes on when the dog is a puppy, I want to make sure that my puppy is reared in a manner that I deem appropriate. So it's very important to me that my dog be naturally reared. And while there is a school that does feed raw and does do minimal vaccinations, they don't clicker train to my knowledge, and also they only train German Shepherds. And while German Shepherds are lovely dogs, they're not the dogs for me. So I really felt like owner training was my only choice. Besides, I really enjoy the work. And also there's the issue of my multiple disabilities. When I got program trained dogs before, they were only trained to guide, and I had to spend between 6 months and a year putting those additional tasks that I need for my other disability on the dog. When I trained my own, I could start putting those tasks on from day one if that's what I wanted to do. And Millie was trained pretty solidly in the retrieve by the time she was 1 to 13 months old, whereas Bristol, having issues with the retrieve to begin with, has never been solidly retrained in the actual retrieve, but was solidly trained in the hold and give by the time she was 3. So it took a year. It also took a year for teaching those other tasks that I needed. So those are the main reasons that I decided to train my own dog, and I'm 99% sure that I will be doing it again because I enjoyed it so much and really learned a lot. My equipment, I use different equipment probably than most of you. I do use a regular guide dog harness, but it is made of nylon instead of leather. It does have a martingale and the clips on the shoulders and the little bunny ears that keep the handle from flopping over the head. It was made by a company called OnTheGoGear.com. Lisa Salinger gave their URL in her podcast. I use a service cape, and it's kind of like a small saddle blanket that goes over the top of the dog's shoulders and fastens with 2 straps, much like a guide dog harness does, one around the chest, one around the belly, and it has pockets. So I can carry things like law cards or wallet, keys, pickup bags, what have you. I also, I got my cape, I'm sorry, from a company called The Raspberry Field. That's www.raspberryfield.com. My leash is the six-way assistance dog leash from Bridgeport Equipment, www.bridgeportequipment.com. It can go over my shoulder or it can be worn under the hand on the harness like a regular guide dog leash would. And I love it because it's wonderful and thin, which is much easier for me to hold on to. So that's the equipment that I use. It's pretty much the same as a regular guide dog, but some things are a bit different. That is pretty much wraps up my podcast. If anyone would like to get in touch with me, my email address is pawpower, PAWPOWER, at MidSouth, MIDSOUTH, .rr.com. That's pawpower at MidSouth.rr.com. And if anyone has any questions or comments, you may feel free to send me an email. Thank you so much, and pet your dog for me.